Ohio Women Podcast, the source of her sport.
Welcome to the Ohio Women Podcast. I am Matt Kinnear, editor-in-chief of Inside Lacrosse Magazine, joined as always with IL's women's editor, Hallie Quillinen. Hallie, it's a news-filled week in the world of women's lacrosse. A lot of exciting, big things are happening. How's your day going so far up in Boston?
Good. It's a good day. As you mentioned, a lot going on, a lot of new content up on the site. We take a look at our May issue, the Colorado feature. We got to take a look at that special digital edition cover. And a lot of high school content going up today, so be sure to give it a look, everyone.
And the end of last week was some really big news in all of lacrosse, but particularly in women's lacrosse. The NCAA Division I Council passed legislation that limits contact between Division I lacrosse coaches and prospective student athletes until September 1st of their junior year in high school. This is the big legislation that was posed to stop early recruiting, and it was led by the IWLCA, the Women's Coaches Association. You spoke with Kirsten Kimmel right after that, became the law of the land with the NCAA Division I Council. Hallie, how excited was she that the NCAA saw it, you know, kind of agreed with the coaches and saw that this was a problem and they passed this legislation?
Yeah, you know, I think that Kirsten was pleased on so many different levels. You know, first and foremost, that the NCAA listened, that they put the interest of these young children seemingly first. And two, that I think, you know, I think it's so cliche, but we've all been saying it, that this is for the kids. You know, one thing that Coach Kimmel kept stressing was, first and foremost, number one priority, this was in the best interest of these kids. You know, she really got into and was referencing multiple scenarios in that there's eighth graders, ninth graders getting onto college campuses when they don't even have 1 year of high school academics under their belt. You know, do you really think that that player, that athlete, that student is able to make the educated decision with what they want to do with the rest of their life? You know, for 4 years in college, some of these kids are committing to service academies. Do they really fully understand what that decision means? So I think that, you know, it's in the best interest. I've certainly been a fan of this proposal in slowing the process down. You know, when I went through the recruiting process, it really was. It was junior and senior year. And you start to learn more about yourself and learn more about your interests and what you might want to do in college and beyond. I think that this is great for high school sports. I think this gives kids an opportunity to just be kids and just focus on their athletics, being a multi-sport student athlete, different extracurricular activities, you know, whether they want to be in the school play. You know, I think that it gives kids that opportunity. And that was one thing that Coach Kimmel really stressed and she was very happy about.
You know, this legislation, it didn't happen overnight. You know, this has been something that's been years in the making. The IWLCA, led by Kimmel, you know, Samantha Ekstrand is another person, you know, Karen Corbett, a lot of people, but they really did a remarkable job with everything that goes into this legislation. It's not just as simple as writing something, you know, sending in an email and then hoping that you get an answer. Hallie, what are some of the things that you've heard about just what these women's coaches did to make sure that this legislation got in front of the right people? You know, they influenced the correct people within the NCAA. They had the correct legal counsel. There's a lot of things that go into it. What are some of those things that you heard from these coaches that went into this process?
Yeah, you know, as you mentioned, you know, I've just been, you know, my hat's really gone off to the IWLCA on so many different levels. It's been personally really nice to see these women at the forefront of a lot of changes in this sport. You know, this year we're seeing the shot clock is in play at the women's Division I level, coming next year in Division II and Division III. And, you know, this year now the women were at the forefront of this recruiting proposal. And I really think it is because of that IWLCA infrastructure, the leadership they have in place, and the camaraderie a lot of those coaches have with each other. You know, one thing that Coach Coach Kimmel said was, you know, 85% of the Division I coaching body was in support of this. You know, she said had 75% been in support, they probably would have moved forward this. But 85%, she considered that an absolute mandate, that it was something that needed to happen at the Division I level in this sport. And, you know, I think that she's been getting a lot of the credit, and rightfully so, from those very close to this proposal. But she was so quick to give credit to everybody else, give credit to the IWLCA, give credit to Karen Corbett, the Penn coach, who co-chaired that recruiting issue committee in the IWLCA with Kirsten Kimmel. But also, absolutely, Samantha Ekstrand, who is their legal counsel. Danny Caro, who's the director of communications and membership for the IWLCA, but she really credited the two of them in particular because, you know, the IWLCA, look what it stands for. The bulk of that membership body are coaches. You know, this time of year in particular, they're very busy and their finger is not always on the pulse of what's going on in the NCAA process. Who do we need to get in touch to next? And really the lobbying process and just maintaining, you know, having that finger on the pulse, she really took her hat off to Samantha Ekstrand and Danny Caro. And, you know, I think that the reaction last week in the greater lacrosse community was a pleasant surprise. You know, I think that a lot of people didn't think this was going to pass. But now that it has, you know, that is the rule. That is the standard of which coaches and players and club coaches and high school coaches have to adhere by now. I think it's going to have some growing pains. You know, you do have those players that have committed. They're in eighth grade, they're in ninth grade, they're sophomores in high school. Where do they stand? In my opinion, and a lot of the coaches that I've spoken to, they're committing, you know, you enter into a commitment fully with the intention that you're going to keep that commitment. So that player and that coach have that commitment. I don't think a lot of that will change, but time will tell. I'm going to be very interested to see what the next 3 to 4 years of what I would consider to be growing pains with this rule look like. You know, you do feel bad for the kid that was right in the middle of their commitment and recruiting process and visiting all of these schools. And now, you know, it's just radio silence. But the other side of this, there is still a lot of time. And that's what I think that this proposal really shows. You know, beginning of your junior year in high school, you still have 2 more years. You still have your whole junior year, your whole senior year. That's a lot of time to figure out what college you want to go to, what team you want to play for. And, you know, I think that a lot of coaches are in favor of this. I'm very interested to see, you know, really how this plays out.
I spoke with J.B. Clark, the president of the Men's Coaches Association, and he was quick to give credit to the IWLCA for their role. You know, from what I understand, there were coaches who had, you know, phone call trees of key people to call about this legislation, extremely organized and extremely on top of the ball with all this, despite being in the middle of a lacrosse season. Hallie, is there anyone more remarkable than Kirsten Kimmel in this sport right now?
You know, she seemingly is just the woman who does it all. You know, I've been very impressed with what she's done at the helm of that Duke program ever since it started. You know, I think that she's one of the best coaches in the country. And the fact that while she is coaching her team down in Durham and recruiting and, you know, everything that it entails being a college coach, and she's spearheading this effort that, you know, not necessarily benefits her program, so to speak, but certainly benefits kids that play this sport, the youth, the coaching body, the process. You know, hats off to her. And this is also a woman, while she was, you know, coaching and spearheading this process, she was battling cancer. And, you know, I think that she really is a remarkable woman. I think there are so many coaches within the IWLCA that would say that. She's definitely, in my opinion, kind of that lacrosse person of the year front runner right now.
Definitely so. Hallie, just for some perspective, when did you commit to Syracuse? And also, you went through a coaching change when you went to Syracuse as well, too. That's kind of one of the factors here in this recruiting discussion. You're recruiting to a coach who might not necessarily be there. So you have some interesting perspective. Can you just walk through a little bit of your timeline?
You know, really, I started getting those written letters September 1st of my junior year. It was such an exciting time. You know, you've been playing for your club teams. You've been going to these tournaments. You've seen certainly coaches on the sidelines. You've seen coaches in passing. But that was really the first time I got an opportunity to see whose eye I had caught, which schools didn't necessarily see me. And I think that that was really exciting. And they were handwritten letters. You know, there was no phone call until that July 1st, you know, summer heading into my senior year. Really, at that time, nobody was committing. A lot of people were still taking all of their official visits. My senior year, my, you know, junior into senior year, that was 05, 06. That was when kids started to commit early. And by early, it was prior to their senior year in high school. I think I committed in August heading into my senior year, just knowing that I wanted to go to Syracuse. It was a school close by. Katie Rowan was already there. John Badalino was the coach. He was my head coach prior. So there were a lot of factors that played into my decision. But as you mentioned, yeah, coaching change while I was there. Lisa Miller was the head coach at the time. She left to go to Harvard. Gary came in. But the transition couldn't have been more seamless. And I really think that was because I chose Syracuse because it was a school that had so many different academic opportunities for me there. That was one thing, you know, I went to college thinking I wanted to be five different things. And Syracuse is a large university, you know, have the academic options as an undeclared major to pursue a number of different things, which I thought was really important. But yeah, you know, I think that at that age, you know, heading into my senior year, I still didn't know what I wanted to do, but I chose a school that had a lot of different options. So I hope that a lot of people really take the time to make their decisions and don't stress about this recruiting process. You know, I think that a lot of kids, the feedback I've been getting at the youth level is, well, what's going to happen? You know, when I get to that point, junior one of my, you know, September one of my junior year, will there really be spots? You know, how will I know? And I think just at this juncture, we don't have any other option but to trust the process. And I think we'll all learn, you know, fans watching the sport, recruitable student athletes, coaches, certainly media, we'll learn watching how this all plays out.
Thanks, Hallie. And that wasn't the only big news of the past 5 days here. Yesterday, the NCAA announced the sites for all of the championships through 2022, and if you're a women's lacrosse fan, you're going to be very familiar with the Baltimore area coming up in the next few years. 2019, 2020, and 2022, Johns Hopkins will host the Division I Women's Championships, and 2021, Towson University will host the Division I Women's Lacrosse Championships. There's a lot of interesting stuff here. The first of which is the fact that lacrosse is still, for the foreseeable future, a Memorial Day weekend event. For the women's game, it's no longer going to be paired in the same city as the men's Division I championship, which this year they're actually going to all be in the same stadium at Gillette in Foxborough. And then continuing along, the D2, D3 women's championships will not necessarily be at the same site as the D1. Hallie, what's your biggest takeaway from all of this?
It's so many takeaways. You know, you just hit on it. I think what's been so special, you know, this year's a little bit different. Division III is obviously not going to be played at Gillette, women as well. But I just, you know, I scratch my head and I wonder, and there has to be a reason, but I genuinely wonder why D1, D2, and D3 women are not all together the same weekend the way that men are. I think that only benefits attendance. It helps our sport. It helps all three divisions get the spotlight they deserve. It doesn't put any one division on an island. And two, why men's and women's are not in the same city. I think it's great for families that are going to watch. Certainly better for our staff going to cover, selfishly. It would be nice to all be in the same city like we were down in Philadelphia the past 2 years. You know, I genuinely do wonder why D1, D2, and D3 women can't all be on the same page and in the same venue. I guess that's just my biggest complaint. And Geographically, I do love, selfishly, Johnny United Stadium, Homewood Field. Those are great venues. I think they're great venues for women's lacrosse in particular. Just the size fits well in terms of the crowds that the Baltimore area can typically pull from Memorial Day weekend. But 4 straight years in the same city, I'm a fan of geographic diversity with a lot of these events. You know, I like that we're in Philadelphia last year, up to Boston this year, down to Long Island next year. I'd like to keep it moving. Maybe go down south, maybe go out west, explore the country. I think that, part of the reason it's in the greater Baltimore area is because attendance numbers are very strong. But how do we know they won't be strong out west until we try? So I'd like to see a bit more geographic diversity moving forward. And I say moving forward, in 2023 and beyond, the next 5 years have already been decided where those championships will take place. And I'd like to see D1, D2, and D3 women all at the same venue. And kind of third, and I would like it for it's tough when if you would have it at the same venue for men and women, especially spanning 6 divisions. Of championships there. But I would like for it to be in the same city. I think it's great for the sport. I think you can kind of take over a city. And we saw that last year with Philadelphia. I wish it were the same moving forward.
I agree with you on that aspect. I know logistically there's not that many cities who can handle, kind of having both, all the women's and all the men's in the same place. I'm really curious how it works out in Gillette this year with everything, the men's D1, D2, D3, along with the women's D1 all in the same stadium. It's going to be really interesting to see how that works out. I loved it last year in Philly. I know I personally got to go to a number of the women's games where in other years I just don't get to because, if they're in 2 different cities, there's just no way that that's possible. I remember getting a flat tire in PPL Park last year and us driving between there and downtown Philadelphia on a donut in my CRV. So it was good times. And we won't be having that in the future as you'll be down here in Baltimore and a few of us out and about, in East Hartford, Connecticut is where some of them will be, and then Philadelphia as well. But Hallie, we are getting really, really, really close to this year's championship weekend. Hard to believe. We're basically a little more than a month away from the championship. Does it feel like that?
No, it doesn't. I mean, I feel like I'm with everyone here that it feels like it's February. Maybe March. It feels like it's March. I feel like this season is just getting going, but it's almost over. I think that looking at the rest of the season and what college lacrosse has in store, we're at conference tournament time next weekend, and then it all continues to roll from there. I am in disbelief that May lacrosse is just around the corner.
It's funny, it goes from, oh my God, the season's just starting, it's so cold, I'm so busy, to, oh my God, the season is practically over, it's recruiting time. But this was a big week for your alma mater, the Syracuse Orange. They had a huge win beating North Carolina, and then another big win last night beating Cornell. Obviously, the win against UNC is huge. UNC is a national title contender, one of the best teams in the country by every single measure that you could possibly have. And last night's win against Cornell was really big for a lot of other reasons, most notably potential to host NCAA tournament time. Hallie, what did you think?
It's been really fun to watch what Syracuse has been able to do really since the beginning of the month. This is a team that has not lost since March and lost more than it won in the month of March. I think it's a young team that's learning a lot about itself. Syracuse, what was very impressive against North Carolina, it was a young Syracuse team versus a veteran-heavy North Carolina team, and the rookies outperformed the senior vets at every position along the way. Asa Goldstock had a stronger day in net than Kaylee Waters, and taking nothing away from Kaylee Waters. She's been an All-American in seasons past. She was on Team USA, at the center circle. Sammy Joe Tracy is one of the best draw specialists in the country. Morgan Widener went toe-to-toe with her and outperformed her. You know, Emily Harris-Trapp was the leading scorer on the field. So I think that Syracuse's freshmen are just really getting their footing. You know, in addition to those three true freshmen, they have a number of redshirt freshmen, a number of sophomores playing key roles. So I think that their youth has matured over the course of the season. Certainly at this juncture, there's no such thing as a freshman mistake for those girls. They have more playing time than a lot of the vets there on the sideline for Syracuse. But, you know, last night's win over Cornell, I think it was kind of a gut check. You know, they were tied at the half, and I think that Gary went in and he, you know, decided what they were going to do. And I think they improved on the draw controls in maintaining possession off of them. Morgan Widener was doing a good job getting the draw in the first half with Cornell, but credit to the Big Red. They went after her. They sent doubles. They caused a number of turnovers. I was very impressed by players like Joey Coffey. I think that conversely, Cornell, where do they go from here? You know, they're coming off of an Albany loss. And once again, an Albany loss, it doesn't necessarily hurt Cornell. You know, Albany's a very good team. They've been knocking at the door. They had a one goal loss to Syracuse earlier this season. Albany's a very good team. They were, you know, playing without a few of their key players for the first three games of the season, and that hurt them, especially against Penn State. But Albany's a very strong team, and Syracuse is a very strong team as well. Cornell has, you know, that marquee win over USC. They beat handily a very strong Penn Quaker team. But the question here is, how does Cornell rebound from back-to-back losses? And that's going to be answered very quickly. They play Princeton this weekend. They close out their season at Harvard before they enter the Ivy League tournament. If you're Jenny Graf, you want your team to turn it around. You want your team to have a strong showing against Princeton. I certainly think Cornell is fully capable of beating Princeton and Harvard, for that matter. But Princeton and Harvard are also fully capable of beating Cornell. And nobody wants to enter any conference tournament on a three-game losing streak. So I think Jenny Graf will want to turn things around in Ithaca. You know, this is a Cornell team. Before entering that Albany game last week, they were one goal away from being, in my opinion, a top four or top five team. They lost to Penn State by one goal. That one goal would have given them an undefeated 11-0 record heading into those Albany-Syracuse, you know, tilt. So, I think that last night's game was huge for NCAA seeding and hosting purposes. You know, I think should Syracuse continue its upward trajectory and should Cornell do the same, I'm not sure that both are in the position to host. I think one or the other would. So I think that could come down head to head. I think Syracuse earned that right should they have that first round host. I think geographically, regionally, that was a big game last night, but it was just also a big game, you know, as Cornell goes into, you know, three straight weeks of Ivy League opponents. I think it was good for them to get out and play somebody else and see how they fared against the ACC.
This Ivy League tournament is shaping up to be a lot of fun, isn't it? It seems like it's the most exciting conference in women's lacrosse right now.
You know, it is. I think there's so many very interesting conferences. I think the Ivy League, you know, you just don't know where things are going to go and the way everything's going to fall. I think Princeton is definitely playing at a higher level than I've personally seen in years past. So you could put your money on Princeton, but certainly Penn, Cornell, Harvard, all capable of putting strong fights together. The CAA, in my opinion, it's really a crapshoot there. You know, JMU has emerged as the likely number one seed in the CAA tournament. But, you know, that tournament's in 2 weeks, and the rest of the field is far from determined. You know, you head in, and Towson and Elon were really the two other teams other than JMU that could potentially fight for an NCAA at-large bid. Both of them aren't even in second place in their conference. They're both tied for fourth right now. So, you know, I doubt that a team that doesn't qualify for a conference tournament will get into the NCAA tournament with an at-large bid. So if you're Elon and you're Towson, you want to finish out strong, especially this weekend. The MPSF, you know, I think it comes down to, as the way we've seen, USC, Colorado, Stanford, you know, who's going to make the biggest effort to win the last year of the MPSF, to get that crucial win and potentially host. You know, I think Colorado, USC right now in particular are both in a hosting conversation. I think a win in the MPSF tournament for both to host is a must. So that's going to come down to, you know, the MPSF and the ACC. You know, this year, in the month of March, Syracuse had losses to Maryland, had losses to Notre Dame, had losses to Princeton, Florida. If you told me in March that Syracuse would be the top seed heading into the ACC, I don't think I would have believed you. But if they win this weekend, they have that win over North Carolina, they're the number one seed. So it's been a very interesting year. You know, I think that a lot of people look at women's lacrosse and they look at, you know, Maryland's been number one for the bulk of the season. And before that, it was UNC, the usual suspects. But if you look beyond it and you really look at the way that a lot of the conferences are shaping up, it's really, you know, it's not been the usual suspects. It's been a fun year thus far.
You mentioned the Terps. As we kind of look into the weekend watch, before we get to the actual weekend, we have a big Thursday night tilt with Maryland at Penn State. Hallie, we've seen Maryland kind of roll through teams all season. Virginia gave them a little bit of a test. Penn gave them a little bit of a test. Before we get to the early part of the season where they had a tough game with North Carolina. Penn State, how well do they match up with the Terps?
Maryland's 15-0, Penn State is 14-1. You know, I think that Penn State, what Missy Doherty has done there and continues to do and elevate the Nittany Lions play has been remarkable. You know, I don't think that anyone matches up well against Maryland this year because look at their record. You know, the proof is just in that record, but I think if a team in the Big Ten in particular is going to give Maryland its biggest push, it's going to be Penn State. So I really think that this is, you know, probably the game of the season in the Big Ten, but certainly the game of the week for the country to tune into. You know, Penn State, what I like about them, I think Steph Lazo is one of the best attackers in the country. But, you know, if you look at the way that this team operates, she's 39 goals, 33 assists. Most of the other potent scorers on this team don't even have double-digit assists. You know, she really is the catalyst. And of late, when teams have been keying in on her, it's just like somebody else steps up. You know, you have Maggie Gallagher. She's really embraced her ability to dish out the assists and pack the scoring punch. Madison Carter, Katie O'Donnell. Madison Carter is also, you know, in addition to her offensive numbers, she's great on the draw control. I think that Carter versus Harshorn on the draw is going to be fun to watch. You know, Maryland's freshman, she's probably right now my rookie of the year pick. You know, I think Maryland is going to take a special team and a perfect game out of that special team to beat Maryland. They are so strong this year and they're playing so well. But Penn State, given their resume and the way that they've played, but the way they've also bounced back, you know, they've been down in a number of games. I love the way they fought back against Notre Dame. Love the way they fought back against Virginia. I think that Penn State could be that special team.
That will be a big one. Hallie, you're going to be in the booth this weekend again. Can you tell us a little bit about what you're going to be doing and which teams you're going to be seeing?
Yeah, you know, I'll be heading down a lot of CAA action this week. You know, I'll be on Lax Sports Network doing a pair of CAA games. And, you know, first I'll be headed down to Philadelphia, headed to Drexel, and they will be playing James Madison on Friday. I think that that's going to be a great game. I'm excited. I've not seen JMU play in person this year, so I'm very excited to head to that game and see the fight that Drexel can put up. You know, Drexel's been able to produce wins in the CAA and is right in that position of, you know, could they qualify for the CAA tournament? So I'm excited to see the fight that they can put in against the top team in the conference. And then I head down to North Carolina, headed to Elon on Sunday from Philadelphia. And Elon hosting Hofstra. You know, if there is a team that's hotter in the CAA this year than Elon, you know, Elon's been able to prove a lot of people wrong and come up with quality wins. But this past week, it's certainly been Hofstra. Hofstra pulled off the upset over Towson. They're going to look to continue that momentum down south. And Alyssa Perella, you know, she's, again, you know, I mentioned Kaylee Hartshorn of Maryland. Alyssa Perella of Hofstra could arguably another rookie of the year. She's done so much for this Hofstra team. She's their leading scorer in goals and assists. She leads this team in ground balls, calls turnovers, draw controls as well. So I'm excited to see her play. I'm excited to see the way that the CAA play this weekend shakes out in terms of tournament seeding.
Excellent, Hallie. Sounds like you have a busy but fun weekend. What else are you going to try to be keeping an eye on in between the games that you're covering?
I really just think the conference mashups as a whole. You know, when you look at, you know, we mentioned a few different conferences, the Big Ten, the ACC, the America East. You look at so many of these conferences and, you know, conference tournaments kick off next weekend. The bulk of the conference tournaments are the following weekend, culminating in Selection Sunday. But so many tournament seedings have very much yet to be determined. So I'm just excited to see who can pull off that upset. Who can pull off the upset and put, you know, the wrench in the plans there and try to, you know, make the tournament field of four or try to get that number one seed. You know, you look at what Syracuse was able to do last weekend. You know, they jumped from two, arguably three in the ACC to now, should North Carolina and Syracuse both win out, Syracuse is the number one seed. And that was all done in a day. So I'm excited to see who can just make waves this weekend.
Excellent. Should be a fun one. And we are so close to May, so everything gets ratcheted up in intensity over the next few weeks. Teams who are looking for their last shot to build their resume, or teams who are holding on to big wins that they had earlier in the year. Hallie, it's always exciting. Thanks for being on. Thanks for tracking everything in a huge week for women's lacrosse. And we will get back here next week to kind of preview conference tournament time and really get into the May push.
Awesome. Thanks so much. Looking forward to it.
IL Women Podcast, the source of her sport.